Hello, everyone, and welcome to Intuition Talks with your hosts, Tina Moody and Kristen O'Meara, a podcast for the consciously curious. Sit back and relax as we have down-to-earth discussions about our journeys of self-transformation, along with sharing channeled messages with you from Spirit. We hope that what we have learned and insights from our special guests inspire you to trust your intuition as you navigate the ups and downs and twists and turns on your life path. Thank you for listening today, and we hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Intuition Talks. I am Kristen O'Meara, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Suzanne Gibson Foy. Suzanne hails from England and is a tutor at Arthur Findlay College, teaching courses in mediumship and spiritual development. Suzanne is also a psychotherapist. She combines her spiritual training and development with psychotherapy to help her clients release psychological and relational blockages that impede spiritual development and the development of mediumship. As some of you know, I have taken many courses at Arthur Findlay College, and I consider it a home away from home. I first reached out to Suzanne 2 years ago for a spiritual assessment because something was blocking my ability to let go and trust more in my communication with the spirit world. It was a wonderful experience working with Suzanne. She connected with my spirit guides and loved ones on the other side and helped me see myself in a different light and trust the path that I was on. So I discovered afterwards that Suzanne has walked the Camino de Santiago in Europe 7 times. Last year, she walked the Camino Francis from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, which is 500 miles or 800 kilometers or 1.15 million steps over the month of August. So if you're not familiar with the Camino de Santiago, it is a historic pilgrimage dating back to the 9th century. It is believed that the remains of the Apostle Saint James rest in the Cathedral of Santiago de Compostela in Spain. So all paths on the Camino lead to the cathedral, and it's a spectacular homage to Saint James, which translates to Saint James of the Field of Stars. So I was so curious about Suzanne's spiritual adventures on the Camino that I asked her to join me today. Hello, Suzanne. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Hi, Kristen. I'm well, and it's a real pleasure to be here and to come and talk about this subject.
Yes, yes. I have been dreaming about walking the Camino for a long time, and I have this Amazon cart filled with stuff for my research. So one day I hope to go. And I have a cousin who's getting ready to go. So I just want to let folks know, and I'll put it in the show notes, the details of how to go to Suzanne's website. But there you talk about your last trip on the Camino. And you describe it as a breaking down and rebuilding or building up process. So I thought it would be nice for you to share with us perhaps what led you to take maybe your first walk on the Camino and a little bit more about this breaking down and building up process.
Okay, so Kristen, I can't talk about the Camino without mentioning my husband, who is a key part of the Camino experience, because we were watching the film the Martin Sheen film, The Way.
Yes, I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, it just kind of, no, I didn't know this. So we were watching this in the Christmas of 2011. So it had just come out. And so we were sitting at home watching it. And my husband was very emotional watching it. And he just said, you know, shall we do it? And I looked at him and I said, are you mad? Are you mad? I can't walk 500 miles. And he kind of said, well, why don't we try? And it was a big year, Kristen, because the summer 2012, I'd already decided at that point I was leaving my job. I was head of history in a private school. And I was leaving that summer to pursue work as a private psychotherapist, but also to create the opportunity for more mediumistic work, which I couldn't do if I was in a tied full-time position. So we decided that we would kind of tie all these things together. It would be the end of my kind of teaching career in terms of teaching teenagers. So that would be coming to a close, and it would be welcoming in this new life. And I could take 5 weeks off because, you know, it was the summer holidays. So I said yes. And the reason I said yes mostly was because my background is a medieval historian. So it yes, was.
When I read that you were a medievalist, and I was like, oh, I have to ask her what that means. Yeah.
So my first degree, which is in history, was 90% of it. Or 80-90% of it was medieval history, medieval European history, English and French in particular, bit of Spanish. So my desire to do it was really based on the buildings, because I love the buildings and I love churches. So that was why I wanted to do it, because I wanted, yes, the religious aspect of it very much so, and the walking through history and the touching of all these wonderful places. So I said yes. And the other reason, and this is just funny, really, my husband never likes going away. So the idea that he's actually offering, saying, let's go away for 4 weeks, I thought, if I say no to this, I'll never have an offer of a holiday again. So I took it. So we went in July. I finished school on, it would have been something like, you know, the 10th of July, something like that. And then the next day we were off. We did lots of planning. My husband, I kind of planned the route, the logistics of the travel, how we would get there, where we would stay, how far we would walk. I did all of that. And my husband did the equipment side of things.
Nice.
I'm just laughing because I tell you what, every Camino we've done, you know, there's always been something slightly disastrous about it, one way or another. And we prepared equipment-wise. I didn't have time to do any physical training because I was coming to the end of my job and I was working so hard. I think I went for one walk in the park, and I think the park was about 3 miles round. So, you know, so I walked it five times. So I had 15 miles under my belt.
Yes.
that was it. But the joke of it is, Kristen, and I have to share it because you learn things. And then you unlearn them. So then you make the same mistake again. And then you think, oh, I can't believe I've just made the same mistake again. So this first time, Kristen, my husband has an old shoulder injury. So he thought that he couldn't carry a rucksack. So he found somebody who makes trailers for walking the mountains, found them in Germany.
Really?
Yeah, so this is 2012. So he found someone who specifically makes trailers, and you measure yourself up and they measure them kind of for you. So we spent, you know, around £1,000 on this amazing trailer. And then we started to think of what we would need and, you know, just in case people, Kristen. So just in case it rained, just in case there was no food, Jim, we'd need to cook, you know, just in case. So the the tripod went, cameras went, cooking equipment went, it's sleeping bag went. Anyway, we arrived, and you know, the getting there, it's not an easy place to get to, St. John. You can't get there directly. So however you get there, it's going to be tricky. It's either going to be several train rides or planes and trains and whatever. It's not easy. But we set out on the first morning, my husband with his, and my husband's called Carlos, so, you know, he's half Spanish. Doesn't speak Spanish, but he's half Spanish. So he has a love of Spain, which at the time I'd never been to Spain. So I didn't have that myself. So we set off with him with his trailer, and you set off and you kind of, you're in the Pyrenees and you come out of St. John, which is, it's beautiful. It is so beautiful. I could have spent days there. And it's in France. It's beautiful. It's in the mountains. There's lots of Napoleonic defenses there. It's just beautiful. Anyway, so we set off to the Pyrenees with a trailer.
Can you tell me the trailer? Is he pulling it? How is the trailer working?
It kind of works around the waist.
Oh, I see. So he pulls it from his waist. So he
pulls it from, it sits on the hips. Yeah.
Okay.
But we had it, you know, overloaded, Kristen. I mean, it was a joke. It was literally beyond overloaded. And people were laughing as we walked by, you know.
They're like, look, if we're not going to go hungry on this trip.
but we didn't have any food with us. You know, you look at the map and there's one place to stop on the day one place. And it's only 7 kilometers along, which is about 4 miles. And I just thought, I don't believe it. I thought, I don't believe there's only one place. So I didn't believe it, but it was true. So we're going up, you know, going up a mountain, which is on the road to begin with. And then you come off the road and you're on the grass. But it was tough. And then, we had a disastrous first day. You know, we set off at 7 a.m. It's about roughly 25 kilometers. It's about 18 miles. And it's up and up and down and up and down and up and down and up through a forest.
Wow.
Which is a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And I think in the forest, you come down.
Pretty steep.
It was just, we arrived at our destination at 9 o'clock at night. So we've been 14 hours. I'm laughing because it was the most horrendous experience. We've been 14 hours. We arrived at this place. I had been very silly. I'd brought walking shoes that seemed to fit my foot. And of course, walking for 14 hours, my foot had doubled in size, but my shoe hadn't. So I won't be too graphic, but I lost, I think, 3 toenails on day one.
And
we didn't have any food. So we arrived at 9 o'clock at night and we got to the reception place and, you know, they weren't very interested. They were answering the phone, doing this and doing that. And I just burst into tears. It was all too much.
And then I'm sure are you thinking like, how am I going to continue week after week? Because that was your...
My husband was, I have to say, was like, I don't want to do this. That was him. I don't want to do this. Whereas I was actually, you know, no, come on. We can do this. We're going to do it. It was set in my mind. We were going to do it. And that night, my feet hurt so much. I couldn't sleep. I was just in agony all night. And then the next day we left in the hotel, because that's the other thing I need to mention. You know, in the hotel, we left an erect camera tripod, sleeping bags, cooking equipment. You know, we left about £500 worth of equipment when we set off the next day. But I think, you know, most people, when they do the Camino, Kristen, they tend to think of doing it that they're going to stay in hostels, which are called albergs. And they're going to really, you know, be very, very basic and being dormitories and we were never going to do that. We were always going to do nice buildings when possible, because it's not always possible, but when possible, nice built historic buildings, nice places, and have some quality time. Because, you know, I was naive. I thought I was having a holiday,
right?
And that I was going to see all these magnificent sights and walk as well. And so the next day, right, come on. I said to my husband, we're going to do this. But he didn't want to do it. And we probably walked about 7 miles the next day. And day two on the Camino, you've come down the Pyrenees. Oh, it's beautiful. It's still, I think, to me, the most beautiful day on the Camino. The scenery is beautiful. The smells are wonderful. The villages are just, they're so pretty. There's cows everywhere. It smells. It's, you know, you've got the lush green grass of the fields, and you can see the mountains in the background. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But we struggled. And I have to say, that first Camino, we must have done about 6 days, but we really struggled. And I had set this itinerary, Kristen, that we were gonna, you know, who needs to do one day at a time? You know, you can, well, I walk 25 kilometers if you can walk 40. So I had these crazy schedules. And that, you know, you can look at it as a breaking down. But yeah, we had to really sit and say, okay, what are we going to do here? Because we can't do this the way that we've planned it. We can't do it. And I couldn't see all the beautiful buildings that I wanted to see. And so the first Camino, we actually, after about 5 days, we quit.
Mm-hmm.
And we hired a car and we went back to the places we'd been and visited all the places that I hadn't been able to go to. And then we drove to Burgos, beautiful city. We stayed there. And then we traded in the car and we got back on the road again at León. So we did kind of about, we did probably, what would you say, 2/3 of the whole distance, mm-hmm. with that bit in the middle on the car. But we had to just start again, and you know, at the end of it, there's so much you learn the first time around that you really don't need very much at all. You know, when I got home and you look at all the stuff, you just think, I just don't need this stuff. A lot of it I like, but I don't need it. And I think that's a big difference of, I like it, but I don't need it. I like it, but if it went tomorrow, it's no longer the end of the world.
Well, so, reminds me, if you don't mind, I had a thought of the movie. I don't remember the name. It could have been called The Way, I think, with Martin Sheen. And I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but there is a point in the movie that I think he loses his backpack a couple times, yeah. Right? I think once it was stolen and it was returned perhaps. And I find that really interesting too, because there was a process, I think, for him that he didn't need all this stuff.
Absolutely. You really, really don't need it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's in a literal sense, as well as the metaphorical sense. In the literal sense, you're not in the middle of nowhere. There are a few days where, yeah, you don't hit many towns at all. But most of the time, you're within, let's say, 7 to 10 miles of a town, mm-hmm. at any one time. So you can always get what you need. And, yeah, you don't need to carry so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Either physically or metaphorically. So you know, that first Camino, and when we got home, you know, or even when we got to Santiago, I thought, never again. I'm not doing that again. So the first experience I was a bit disappointed because I had wanted to walk the whole thing, but we couldn't do it the way that I planned it. Mm-hmm. And as I said, my husband was quite, he wasn't really having any of it until we re-established. And from then on, I think he really enjoyed it. But it is that what you do start to question, you know, what's important, what do I need? And one of the things that really struck me was that I, at the start of it, I was unfit. I hadn't done anything exercise-wise for quite a while. But in my youth, I was very fit. And the body remembers. And even just walking up the Pyrenees when it was, I didn't find it hard till towards the end. And I was like, this is amazing. My body is just, you know, back into feeling something, feeling good. And that was remarkable to me, that having not really done probably that, what was I was 42, I probably hadn't done any decent exercise for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And the body remembered.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And that was amazing. And I'd been really worried about a very badly sprained ankle I'd had from my early 20s. And I just thought, my foot is no way. Is that going to... And it was... Kristen, it was fine. And I went from walking in these heavy boots to protect my ankle and shoe. And we ended up walking in walking sandals. So they're really flexible shoes. And because you're going over stones all the time and, you know, uncomfortable terrain, you actually need flexibility and not stiffness. So I had these shoes that were at least one size too big for me, leather, but really flexible. And they had holes in them, so my feet could breathe the whole time. And
Oh, that's nice.
So, you know, almost the opposite to what you expect it to be.
What brought you to go again your second time?
Well, precisely. So again, so got home thinking, no way. And then we watched the film again. We've watched this film many times. And my husband...
I just love that film. It's so beautiful.
And my husband is like, you know, let's do it again. And I said, on the one hand, I think you're mad. But on the other hand, we have unfinished business. So 2 years later, we did it again, same route, but being, I'm going to say, slightly more sensible, but only slightly. This is, you know, how long does it take you to learn a lesson? So there's several books about the Camino and with all the maps and how to walk it. And there's a really common one, which I think is excellent. I've got it here. The John Briley one. Okay,
I've seen that. I was going through my Amazon crate.
It's the most used one, and it is excellent, Kristen. And he does it in 33 days.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And so we did it in 27. So the second time we did it, I'm laughing because I was really, it starts off fine. And then, you know, then I just got really miserable. And I got really miserable because I can remember one place in particular where the earth is kind of really red, real red, orange. And you leave this town called Ponte l'Arena, beautiful, beautiful medieval bridge. You leave the town and then you start walking up this hill that's like that, which most of them are. And you've got this blue sky above you and your nose is like 2 foot from the ground as you're just walking up this hill. And I just thought, what am I doing? I can't even look up to see the sky. I'm just, you know, focused on not tripping and not, and I had a bit of a fit with myself, Kristen. And I think it's one of those things I then started into, you know, why do I make life so hard for myself? Why do I keep creating this kind of struggle? It doesn't need to be that. Why do I make it so difficult? And that kind of, you know, starts off that inner journey of that Camino was that was one of the realizations of you just keep walking one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other. No matter how hard it is, you just one foot in front of the other. That's all you focus on. And you can keep going.
That reminds me of just, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I just got excited. It reminds me of what you wrote on your website about resistance. So it's almost like I can imagine, because it would be hard for me. I'm not in shape. I have injuries. And I imagine doing this journey and walking at such a steep incline and also wanting to enjoy where you are or where I am, say. I can imagine fighting with that hill and being in resistance to one more step. Darn it, I want to look and enjoy. And isn't this also a holiday? But it's like a letting go and an acceptance of where you are, I imagine.
Absolutely. And I think each Camino that I've done has been difficult in its own way, partly because of partly because of my logistics of how far we can walk, which is always what I've set, nobody else. And although I've always built days in, apart from a couple of times, I've had to keep rescheduling it. So my days off disappear as I try to make the walk more reasonable. So it ends up that, no days off. I think I've had one day off on each of them. But the resistance, and that's so the right word, Kristen, because we go in the summer, we usually go July or August, and it gets really hot. By 1 o'clock, it's going to be 30 degrees, sometimes higher than that. And walking in that becomes miserable. Mm-hmm. So you have to get up early, get out on the road early, sometimes in the dark, because it doesn't get light there until gone 7 in the morning. So if you're going to start walking at 6, you need a torch. And that was this kind of breaking down. I think there were three, maybe more, things that over time really I came to enjoy. One was you have to get up early. You have to. And I hated that at first. Going to bed. I don't get to bed at 9 o'clock so I can get up at 5 o'clock so I can be out on the road for 5:30. I thought, why am I doing this? But in the end, I loved that. And food, the Spanish, they don't really get going until 8 o'clock in the morning. So you're not going to get breakfast. You're not going to get breakfast unless, something's been left over from the night before. So I was very much a three meal a day nibble person. And I would say by the end of the eighth, maybe even the last one, actually, maybe the last one by the end of last year, I'd come into being a one meal a day person.
Oh, interesting.
And that's a radical shift. From someone who would get grumpy with low sugar and all of that. I got through that. And that's the Camino that did that. Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. So I'm not always a one meal a day person, but I can be.
Right.
That's the thing, I can. And at home, normally I just would have two meals. Don't have three meals anymore at home.
Do you feel that there's a resiliency? I imagine an inner and a physical resiliency that builds because of the pilgrimage you're on, for whatever reason. Everyone's got their own reason. But for the extent that you're putting in this energy, you're going every day, walking so much, that I can see it just being almost like an athlete training, where you just have to let go of these expectations that you would have. Absolutely. And and accept that, okay, a meal, you're not going to have the meal. And it's like this, almost like a, I see this ping pong kind of like, you know, aware, being aware of it and trying to let it go, or maybe even not trying, but coming into that acceptance of we're going to have 3 hours of walking and there's not going to be a breakfast. For me, I get really frustrated when I'm hungry. Like, food is really important to me.
Yeah.
For everyone, of course, but I really,
I used to get really hangry.
Yeah. It activates a very, old wounding for me. And,
absolutely. So that food was a big theme. And I think if I'd have just done one Camino, that would not have been solved, if you like. So it's doing the many that has changed my relationship with food. And I quite like that. I think that's a good thing. And I actually like the discipline of the Camino, whereas the first two, I really resisted it. I didn't want to be, constrained so much by time. And I think that's partly, you know, having taught for many years, when you are by the bell all the time, you are ruled by a very strict timetable, and you're ruined by the bell, and you're teaching people to sit exams. So you have a daily bells, but you've also got through the year, you've got, you know, specific points that you're very constrained by. So I think I wanted to go on holiday and, you know, be free. So I found it really frustrating. I didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. But in the end, and I think this is the spiritual part of it, the same when, you know, you look at any religious practices with prayer and meditation, it starts off with perhaps a desire, then it doesn't go how you want to, so you don't want to do it, and then you have to do it, and then you come to, okay, you grudgingly trudge through it, and then from trudging you start to enjoy it. And then you start to look forward to do it. And then you need to do it for your own inner well-being. So I think the walking is the same as a meditation practice, a prayer practice, this whole relationship that we have with God. It is this dance of something I want and I don't want, and I don't want it on your terms, I want it on my terms. You can't have it on your terms. You have to surrender. So there is this dance that gets played out through the physicality of the Camino.
Oh, wow. And so I imagine, and I remember you writing about, more specifically about your last time, but every time you go, I love what you said, that you're not the same person. Even though you're going perhaps maybe in the same, starting on the same path, I know you've done it differently because all paths lead to the church, to the cathedral.
Yeah, Santiago, yeah.
So you're going perhaps through the same terrain, but you're not the same.
No.
So although I would love to hear about that self-reflection.
Well, do you know, I think what was really interesting, because the last year when we did it, it was probably, I'm going to say it's the hardest, but that's not true. It was as hard as one of the earlier ones, particularly because, Kristen, I was really unfit, mm-hmm. and I've gained a lot of weight over the last couple of years because we hadn't been during COVID. We booked it and had to cancel, booked it and cancelled it. Oh, yeah. So we hadn't done it for a while, and I was really a bit heavy.
Yeah,
and it made it very hard, made it hard. And again, you see, Kristen, I'd stupidly had us doing doubles here and one and a halfs there in terms of the distances. So again, I had to reschedule it and scale it back. So it was tough. But I think what was very different is the expectation of it. And I took a lot of books with me, you know, on my Kindle, and I read a lot. And I took it as a time of the walking. The first half was hard, and then after that, you know, again the body was much better, and I lost a bit of weight, thank goodness. So the walking got easier, and I read, and it was, you know, a real time for just reading and having space, rather than just collapsing in a heap, being exhausted. It was the having space to read these other, you know, these spiritual writers, and to just, yeah, take stock. But it was hard. And I think, I suppose, the doing it over the time span, and I know that we'll probably do it again next year. And it's then the taking into account your age and
physical
changes. So it's being kind of realistic. It's being realistic, isn't it? That's the thing.
Well, and I think that's, I can relate so much to what you're saying. When I apply it to caregiving, because I have a teenager on the autism spectrum, and I'm taking care of my mother in the home. We all live together. And I go through almost my own Camino in a way, where sometimes I feel like my wings are clipped. I'm in a situation where I have to really accept that I'm doing certain things that are perhaps repetitive and exhausting. But when I step back and through a practice, like what you're saying, of that mindfulness or meditation or prayer, however I can connect, I have to look at my experience differently and know that even though I may want to go take a week away or have more time for myself, the spiritual aspect of connecting and being with my family is more important. And I have to see myself and them as spiritual beings too. Like it needs to eclipse the, oh my gosh, you know, the toilet's clogged and Austin's having a hard time, you know, putting too much toilet paper in the, you know, it's just that thing where it's just, it's happening constantly. And it's always an opportunity for me, as hard as it can be, to help me change my perspective.
I think that's the bigger thing. I think it is the letting go of certain expectations that obviously are not just to do with the Camino, that are much more about the bigger picture in your own life.
Yeah.
Letting go of expectations, you know, the disappointments are tied up with expectation, aren't they, really? So once you start to let go of expectations and the idea of how things should be, then your perspective actually changes.
Yes.
And the more you align to that inner power. I can remember one Camino, and it was a short one, actually. It must have been 2015, when we just did what's called the English route. And it's only about 5 days. It's about 120 kilometers, but it's about 5 days. And it's not a route that many people do. So there's not many facilities on that route at all. And it was quite tough. There weren't many, you know, weren't many places to grab a coffee or to sit down. And I just remember on that one, because of things that had happened in my own life, I just on that one got to the point where I just surrendered. I just surrendered. And it is a kind of as long as I serve you, that's all that matters in this world. And so there was a big, I suppose that was the movement from I want it on my terms to, okay, I'll have it on your terms. And that was a big, big shift. A big shift.
Did your trips to on the Camino, did they help you in your development as a medium and as a teacher?
I think it's that big, as I talked about, you know, it's the dance that you do between this is what I want. You know, I want to be a medium. I want to be a tutor at the college. I want it to be this way, into the letting go of that completely and moving into, well, if it's your will,
okay,
I will be there. So I think there's that on the one hand. But the other, Kristen, more and more, I would say I now see, and it's not very popular view, but I now see mediumship as a byproduct of the relationship between us as individuals, us and our spiritual self, and those who work with us, and God. And I think our mediumship is a byproduct of that and a reflection of that. So while mediumship has been at the center of my world for a long time, and it still is at the center of my world, my way of approaching it is different. It's almost like my mediumship sits on the side and all the other stuff is what's important. And my mediumship changes as I change and my energy changes, my mediumship changes.
So let me understand. So what you're saying is that your connection, your communication, your spiritual self connecting with and having a relationship with God, with spirit, is paramount. And yes, the mediumship is just this experience or avenue or path or a way, but you don't maybe, and I'm guessing, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you don't necessarily need it. Is that?
I'm not saying I don't need it. I'm saying that.
Need it to communicate or to connect or, yeah.
I'm saying my mediumship changes as I change. And I change because of all of those other things.
I see. So that's where the byproduct comes in.
Yes.
So your mediumship changes.
Yes.
As you change. So it's not the stagnant, I do this and I, you know, it goes this way.
And I would say then your mediumship is a reflection of your own relationship with your own spirit and God and the spirit world. So,
oh, yes.
Do you see what I mean? So it's no longer I'm trying to achieve X, Y, and Z. It's more that I do these things and the result is that my mediumship's better.
Yes. I totally agree with that. Oh, yeah. I feel that, and let me see if I understand you, because I think what you're saying is so important. I really want to get it. Every time I go to Arthur Findlay, kind of like what you're describing with the Camino, it's the same place. The teachers seem, you know, many of them are the same. Even the courses can be similar. But every time I go, I'm different. My mediumship is different. I've experienced a lot of things up until the year before. I'm trusting more. I'm letting go more. I'm able to connect more. And my experiences are different. They're clearer. I trust more, and I have experiences that I wouldn't have been able to have per se than the year before. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so there has to be an inner journey taking place for your mediumship to come into its potential and for it to keep evolving, there has to be an inner journey and a willingness to undergo that inner journey, which means sometimes you do things that feel like it's taking you away from your mediumship, but it isn't. You're just doing, you know, a slight, you're going off route slightly, but you'll come back on and you'll be stronger.
Oh, I love that.
So there is that sense of sometimes you get pulled away deliberately because of the changes that are going to take place within you, so that when you return to your mediumship, you know, something has changed or something more beautiful can happen. So to me, mediumship is always about the mystery of life. And in a way, with mediumship, we're trying to demystify it. But as you know, that what we talked about beforehand, they keep showing us that it is all about the mystery of life.
Oh,
and so as you unfold yourself and you let go of all the kind of human expectations we have, you know, that's the stripping away, isn't it? The stripping away is of all the material and what goes with that material and psychological expectations that we have. All of that gets stripped away. And you get stripped to the core in that sense. And it's within that that the spirit in a way becomes stronger, because you have to surrender to it. You have to surrender to it. You're not in control anymore. That's the point where you recognize you're not really in control here. So
that's been the hardest for me to learn.
Yeah.
Is the surrendering. And I can imagine you on the Camino so many times just doing just that, but in a different way.
Yeah.
I admire you so much for all of the trips that you've taken there. And it's so inspiring. It really is.
Well, there are times when it is so beautiful and it's so, you know, wonderful to be doing it, wonderful to be alive. And then you think you're just so lucky to be in a position where you can do it.
Yes. Oh, gosh. I can't wait to go. I just can't wait to go. Well, thank you so much for sharing time with me and us. And I just really appreciate it. And I appreciate you. And I hope one day I can get to Arthur Findlay and take a class with you.
That would be lovely, Kristen. And just before I go, I have somebody sitting next to me that I have to show you, because it's just funny. So this is, if I can lift him. So this is St. James.
Oh, I love that.
Who sits by my fireplace. And this is a St. James that you probably won't find one like this, because this was from the first Camino. And I found him in a shop, and the shop seller did not want to sell him at all. And we left that place, but then of course we hired a car and we went back, and you know, he was for sale, so I didn't barter. I offered the full price, so the shopkeeper had to part with him, because he's not a mass produced one. I think he's a properly carved one. But then the joke is, Kristen, that my husband then, when we started the Camino again, my husband had to carry this.
I don't think it's light.
No, it's over a stone. So it's over 15 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
So he carried this.
Oh.
About 200 miles.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
In his rucksack.
Oh,
sometimes on his trailer, at other times in the rucksack. St. James got carried.
So special. And I know folks can Google St. James, but before we go, I'm going to share with everyone how to get in touch with you. If they want to learn more about you and your thoughts about the Camino and your offerings, but can you share just a little bit about St. James before we wrap up?
Well, I can't share a visual because I'm not from a Christian background, but yes, St. James is one of the apostles and he is believed to be buried at Santiago.
Yes.
So when you get to Santiago, you can, I don't know if they can do it anymore, but you used to be able to go into where he is and to put your hands on the statue above him and to give your thanks, your gratitude or your prayers, which just before they started to do a lot of work on the cathedral, I did. And as I put my hands on the head where so many other hands have been, I just felt this beautiful presence.
Oh, you did. Oh, wow.
I did. And I'm not saying who it was, but just this beautiful presence. And it was wonderful. So, yeah, so James, one of the apostles, he goes off to spread the word.
The James word, yeah.
So he goes off to spread the word and ends up allegedly in Galicia.
Yes. And
makes his way across from Galicia.
Oh, that's so special. Well, everyone, I've had two spiritual assessments with Suzanne. She's amazing, amazing. I highly encourage you to check out her offerings. She offers mediumship readings, spiritual assessments, and mentorship courses, and dream analysis, which is amazing. So her website is SuzanneGibsonFoy.uk, and I'll have it in the show notes. Please check out Arthur Findlay College. She's teaching quite a bit this year. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Much love.